right, this is Gary Parrish again from CBSSports.com. Again, it's now Thursday night, January 15th, 2015. And this, of course, is the Eye on College Basketball podcast brought to you by Squarespace, which recently launched a version of its platform called Squarespace 7, which is a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, 15 new templates, and a feature called Cover Pages. If you want to try the new Squarespace, go to squarespace.com. Enter the offer code FUN at checkout to get 10% off that Squarespace. Start here. Go anywhere. I'm joined tonight by Matt Norlander and Sam Vecenie, of course. And I want to start with the Duke Blue Devils. Undefeated when they woke up on Sunday morning, run off the court by NC State, run off the court, their home court, by Miami. The back-to-back games now, they've given up at least 87 points. NC State and Miami both shot better than 50% against Duke. Sam, how big are Duke's defensive issues right now?
They're pretty massive. I mean, my biggest thing is that I don't know how they're going to fix them either, because they run that two-point guard system with Tyus Jones and Quinn Cook, and that's clearly their best lineup right now because Rashid Suleiman isn't really giving them anything off the bench. And that lineup is just getting torched by guards. Duke has given up 25 points to Trey Jackson, 22 points to Ryan Boatwright, 21 to Trevor Lacy, and then 24 to Angel Rodriguez, plus whatever LeComp scored on Monday night as well. Because that game was Monday or Tuesday, I can't remember. But they have serious problems defending slashing guards, getting to the hoop, and defending guards that are quick enough just to beat Tyus Jones and Quinn Cook off the dribble. And plus, honestly, we talk about how good Jahlil Okafor is. He's really having problems with high ball screens and trying to defend people on the perimeter in the pick and roll.
So why did it take so long for this to show up?
I think that part of it was probably just the way that their schedule went. Like, Wisconsin runs that swing offense. They don't really do a ton of high ball screens. Michigan State's talent level just probably really wasn't great enough to give them problems on a neutral floor. UConn's the same way. So I think that they got a really good matchup with Wisconsin, and outside of that, they haven't totally been tested yet. Like, even the Stanford game, Chason Randle kind of took them apart a little bit and kept that game close for a while. So I think that it's more they just hadn't been tested properly yet until they got to ACC play, and now that they're there, it's kind of starting to show up a little bit more.
And there's no reason to think it gets better quickly. Like, I'm not the type of guy who looks.
No, they have to face Terry Rozier and Chris Jones
right,
on Saturday.
Right. So good luck. Like, yeah, I'm actually headed to that game. When I booked the flight, the idea was I would get to see Mike Krzyzewski go for his 1,000th win. Now I'm going to be in attendance. It'll be historic. I will be in attendance when Mike Krzyzewski is an underdog in an attempt to try to get his 998th win. And so it has not played out the way I anticipated or the way anybody anticipated. But my point is, I'm not the guy that sits around middle of January and talks about, well, this is going to be the reason they can't. It's not the reason they can't do anything. Like, they can still go to a Final Four, win a championship. Like, yeah. Where was UConn this time last year? But they've already dropped two ACC games, and they are, you know, barring an upset, going to drop another one on Saturday. You can get this stuff fixed over time, but you can't get it fixed in a matter of days before you go play Terry Rozier and Chris Jones, can you, Matt?
Hey, guys. Good to be back on the podcast.
It's nice to have you here. How was skiing, by the way?
Skiing was good. Skiing was tremendous. Honestly, there are only talking with you guys, covering sports, playing guitar, and skiing. That's my Mount Rushmore of Norlander fun activities. And I did very much
hate us right now.
I did very much upload the podcast in a dive bar in Killington, Vermont, and I could barely, like, I had headphones on so I could hear you, but it was kind of getting loud in there. And so I was like, all right, this sounds like it should be cut correctly. So hopefully last Thursday's, you know, debut evening podcast went well. But that was a very good experience. And but anyway, good to be back.
It's nice to have you back. But to Duke.
To Duke. So
can they get it straight by Saturday?
Yeah, they can. I think they're going to beat Louisville.
Listen to you.
Well, you're talking to a guy that basically wrote off Virginia's hopes at winning the ACC regular season title and kind of handed it to Duke, so I can't back down from this. Listen, it's not a good sign with how Duke has played over the past two games. I'm inclined to think it's more aberrational than Sam, because they were certainly much better. Like, I would argue that Michigan State does have a better collective overall roster and players for what they want to face against Duke than Miami does. I think that game was so weird, the way that the Hurricanes were able to just steamroll Duke. And I was not able to watch it live. I DVR'd it, went back, watched it, and it was – I think that will go down as one of the most surprising results of the season, because I don't think Duke is going to lose more than five total prior to the Selection Sunday. But, I mean, Temple's a team that whacked Kansas. They were fine with them. Stanford is a team I think is the second-best team in the Pac-12. Duke handled them relatively well. I know Wisconsin doesn't run the same kind of stuff, and Duke had a wild game from the field that night. They've looked pretty good throughout the season, more on offense than defense, but their defense was not lacking. This was not a team that really had gaping holes. And so maybe they just have had a bad couple of days. I mean, you know, their two losses came on a Sunday and then on a Tuesday. This is certainly a huge game that they will be an underdog in. I'm not as big on Louisville as everyone, and even as much as I once was. But Krzyzewski's had teams with much worse defenses than this wind up with two seeds and do pretty well for themselves over the course of a season. So I think that they will get this straightened out, and they still will be in position at worst for a two seed come Selection Sunday. But yeah, sure, they've got some weaknesses in terms of size and how they're going to play on the perimeter. But at least, you know, I mean, Duke's always interesting, I guess. But I kind of like the fact that they're hitting some sort of challenge here. And it's now we've kind of passed the torch from Kentucky getting taken to some real close situations and winning. And Calipari was right when he said, you know, overtime games for us are losses in terms of perception. I think that's right. But with Duke playing the way it has over the past, you know, few days here, now the two teams that look to be a cut above the rest of the sport don't necessarily. But let's not, like, I still think it's clearly Kentucky and Duke, in my opinion, that are the two best.
What about Virginia? How could you be dismissive of Virginia like that?
I'm not dismissive.
It sounded dismissive. It sounded
Virginia
dismissive.
Now number one in KenPom. I think it's been that way for a few days, even over Kentucky. They are ridiculous. I don't think this has ever happened before. Maybe I should give old Kenneth a text. But so the way that his system works, he has a different way of evaluating team value or player value. So like his KenPom Player of the Year watch is all in tempo free. Guidelines and numbers. Virginia, this is like, you know, logically it seems impossible. Four of the top 10 most valuable players are on Virginia. Like that's just stupid. That should not be possible. But Anthony Gill is actually number one. Justin Anderson's been the breakout player, if you will. And then Sam's preseason man crush and Malcolm Brogdon, he's been good, but you know, he's only at six right now. So I'm plenty high on Virginia. I just think Duke is a better team through and through. And if they played on a neutral court, I would take Duke to win.
You would take Duke right now over Virginia on a neutral?
I would.
I wouldn't.
I would not either.
Not right now.
Just to throw this out there as well, like, I'm not down on Duke by any means. I still think they're like a top two seed in the NCAA tournament.
Let's be clear. We all agree on this.
Saying, yeah, but Matt did say that Coach K has like had worse defenses than this and made far greater waves. Like, they're 64th right now in adjusted defense per KenPom. That would be the second worst of the KenPom era for Coach K.
Nah, but don't look at the rank. Don't look at the ranking. Don't look at the ranking. Look at the actual points against adjusted. You know, in terms of, you know.
Yeah, it would still be third worst.
Nerd alert! Nerd alert! Nerd alert!
GP, you can't go nerd alert when you cite KenPom just as much as us on this podcast.
I know, but I'm not here arguing True. About, look at the adjusted this and that.
Well,
whatever.
Hey, when we're having a discussion, context matters.
Hey, you guys continue. Continue being nerds.
But the two times that they lost in the first round to Lehigh and to Mercer were the two times that this defensive rating has been as close as it is to what the 2015 iteration is right now.
Oh, my God. I know what you're saying. They're going to lose to Kiefer Sykes and Green Bay in the first round.
That's what he's calling right now.
I'm not saying they're going to lose to the 15 seed in the first round of the NCAA tournament, but this team does have big defensive issues that are not going to be fixed overnight. And it wouldn't surprise me if we're looking at like a 5 or 6 loss team. Like right now they're projected to go 11-7 in the ACC.
Yeah. I think that's nuts. I think they'll lose 5 games total. Like they'll probably drop at Carolina. They'll lose at Notre Dame, right? Do they have a road game at Notre Dame? I think they do. And they'll lose at Virginia. So I think those will be the three they lose. I think they'll beat Louisville.
Hey, when is Notre Dame going to stop holding its student athletes accountable?
Oh, yeah, God. I know. Is it me or has it been like four of the past seven seasons Notre Dame has lost like an important player? I might be blending football, but there's someone that's always unable to get on the field or on the court with Notre Dame because their grades aren't up to snuff, but there's some sort of vague academic problem. You know, Zach August, they will need him in the long run. But to me, Notre Dame overall, would be interested in what you guys think. I think they're the most underrated team in the country. I think people don't realize that they're 16-2 and have had a terrific offense led by Jerrion Grant, who's going to be a top 20 pick.
Well, how are they underrated? They're like, where are they ranked? They're like ranked like really
under
high, right?
In terms of, I don't know. I feel like Go ahead, Matt. I feel like Notre Dame is like one of the six best teams in the country, and I don't get the sense that people believe that.
They're ranked. I don't know that I would say sixth, but I agree with you public perception-wise that it feels like they aren't really getting a lot of attention necessarily, despite their high rating.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, you're right. I don't know the exact numbers, Matt, but it does seem like every year it's a football player here or three football players there, or two basketball players here or a basketball player there. For the second straight year, at least for the time being, they're operating without a very important piece. And it just must be a weird dilemma for Mike Bray, because on one hand, you look at Duke, you look at Carolina, you look at Louisville, you look at Syracuse, and you go, I've got to recruit a certain type of player to be able to compete with these guys. And then you end up with a certain type of player, and at least in multiple cases now, that certain type of player seemingly can't do the work that it requires to be in school at Notre Dame. And I just wonder if this is ever the type of thing that makes you say, you know what, maybe I need to get somewhere else. I've talked to enough coaches to know that academic standards become a huge issue in terms of jobs they desire and do not desire. And I just wonder, at what point do you get tired of losing a key player every year?
I'm not sure. Gary, you and I have talked about this on the podcast in the past and even, you know, off air. Bray seems to be an exception to, I think, a rule that we agree on. Him and GAT3 at Georgetown, who's now been there 11 seasons, and that's coaches who aren't like bona fide legends, guys whose names you would, you know, hang on a banner in a rafter or whatever. Usually at a major school, you know, you get 6 to 8 years to really make some headway, and then either you get promoted to a better job or you just go on to a different job. Bray has been there well over a decade at this point, and he's had some success, not great success, a lot of headaches with getting the guys he needs into that program. I think he's been so good for the school. I know sometimes fans have gotten frustrated in that he's had good teams that have not amounted to anything in the tournament. But this one, I don't have a read on Bray in terms of, like, if he's good at Notre Dame for another 8 to 10 years, or if stuff like this will start, you know, who would want him and where would he might want to go? I'm not entirely sure, GP.
You know, the rule, just so people know what we're talking about, I have a fundamental belief that unless you're a Hall of Famer, like want to go, down as an icon at the particular school where you coach, particularly at the high major level, you better bounce jobs about every 6, 7, 8 years, because otherwise you're going to reach a point where the fans just get tired of you. It doesn't matter if you're still doing in year 10 exactly what you were doing in year 3 that they were excited about in year 3. It's just going to turn on you one way or another. And so I don't want to speak for Buzz Williams, but I think he sort of subscribes to that as well. And it's among the reasons, many reasons, but among the reasons he was willing to bounce from Marquette to Virginia Tech when he actually did. And so, but Bray, like, to your point, he seems to be, I don't think anybody would call Mike Bray a Hall of Famer or even an icon, but he seems to be somebody who, you know, all these years into it is on pretty decent ground. Like, you did the hot seat thing this year. You didn't put Mike Bray on it, you know? When's the last time Mike Bray was under any kind of real pressure? So he seems to be an exception to a larger rule.
Yeah, but yes. And I guess, I mean, do we give, here's the funny thing is, like, do we give credit to Notre Dame for, I guess, essentially like holding itself to its own standards. It's one of those things where, like, you know, Bray, it's out of, he's, you know, basically, you know, Bray's not happy about this. He's a guy who's great with the media, and he said, it's out of my hands. And when a coach says that, he's, you know, essentially just putting it on in the administration, and he understands that. But I mean, don't you get to a certain point here where if you're, I guess if you're a power player at Notre Dame, maybe you get a little sick of it. You know, do you, does Bray feel pressure? You can't keep having guys. I mean, Jerry and Grant missed a year. I mean, granted, his team is now benefiting from that because the roster and the talent this season are amounting to a team that's 16-2 and could be a 2 seed. But this is something that's been a recurring problem.
But it's not something that's going to change, you wouldn't think, because they don't, they, you know, they'll mess up a football program over this stuff as well. Like,
I know,
you
know, and think about how big, I mean, basketball is right. Just nothing compared to the football. Yeah.
Hey, you mentioned something that's interesting to me in terms of like job bouncing, and is it beneficial to do it unless you're going to be an icon? And I don't think anybody's a better example of that right now than Frank Haith, who's got Tulsa off to a 4-0 start in the American Athletic Conference. They're the only undefeated team in the American. Now, I don't think that means they're going to win that league, and I don't think it means they're the best team in that league. But Frank Haith was, I guess people could debate this, but I think this is basically true, about a year away from getting fired at Miami, bounced to Missouri, and probably one more bad year away from getting bounced at Missouri, from getting moved at Missouri, and then he bounced to Tulsa, and now he's got a team that's in first place in what is a quality basketball league. Is anybody smart? Anybody got the basketball coaching profession figured out right now, Sam, better than Frank Haith?
I don't know. I mean, he keeps going to these schools that have pretty decent returning rosters. Like at Tulsa, they returned a lot of that NCAA tournament team last year that Danny Manning had. At Missouri, they returned Phil Pressey, Marcus Denman, all those guys, Kim English, I think. And then I don't really remember the Miami situation whenever he got there. I don't think it was particularly great. I think that he never really got that program totally going, if I'm not mistaken. But right. Like at Missouri, like he kind of realized that he had outstayed his welcome and just jumped, and now he has Tulsa going, and the roster at Tulsa is pretty perfect for the American and might be able to scratch and claw to an NCAA tournament bid, but probably not. But I mean, the expectations are lower there too, so it seems like he's kind of figured it out, like you said.
Hey Matt, I earlier this week wrote a column about Dayton and how, after coming off an Elite Eight last year, you know, they've been hit from a variety of angles that have things that have limited their roster to the point where they now only have 6 scholarship players, nobody taller than 6'6", and yet they're on a 7-game winning streak right now. Is it more impressive Archie Miller taking Dayton to Elite Eight, or Archie Miller actually continuing to win despite all of these roster limitations? Either way, is it fair to call him somebody who's solidified his place among the quote rising stars in the profession?
Yeah, this is more impressive. I mean, listen, it's not easy to get to an Elite Eight, but it is winning 3 games, and maybe your team gets hot and you get the right opponents and magic in a bottle. I'm maybe more fascinated with this than anything this season. I'm not joking. For a team to be 14-2, lost big players off an Elite Eight team, Archie kicks off his 2 tallest remaining players after a dorm room theft, 6 scholarship. I mean, you laid it out. To have 6 guys on scholarship, no one over 6'6", A-10's not a terrible league, and they've started off 4 up, 4 down, all wins. I don't really know how he's doing this, and he has built Dayton into a pretty decent at-large candidate to this point. They're going to have to really hopefully win the games they need to win down the stretch, and they should be in. Listen, he had job offers after what they did last year and job opportunities. I would think they're only going to increase this season unless Dayton totally bottoms out, because when you can do this and then you can have your agent go to any desperate AD and say, you know, look at his last name, look at what he's done, you know, look what he did 2 seasons ago, then look what he did this season. Big things are ahead for Archie Miller. He is getting there, where he is going to be considered among the 3 or 4 biggest coaching names under 40 years old.
You know what? Like, what's interesting is that if you talk to other coaches, they all have a really high opinion of him. Like, they label him as elite. Like, he's not just somebody who got hot and went to an Elite Eight. He's somebody who is going to be one of the giants in this sport. I mean, he's only 36 years old right now. I mean, I think this. We look up, what is it, 2015? We look up in 2025. I bet you Archie will be on somebody's list of top five coaches in America.
I think that's absolutely going to be the case.
And you said you don't know how he's doing it. He doesn't know how he's doing it either. But one of the things I found fascinating is so often we hear, you know, coaches, I don't know if it's make excuses, but they just sort of explain their situation like, where our point guard got hurt, or, you know, we lost our starting center, or, you know, these two kids didn't get ineligible. And for people who don't realize exactly what happened, first, they had a 6'11 center freshman who's a partial qualifier. So he's in school, he's practicing, but he cannot play. Then there are two other centers who was going to be their starting center and backup center, They got involved in the on-campus theft situation, so they had to be removed. Had another player have to end his career because of concussion-related symptoms. And then there's a junior college player who had a preseason knee operation or procedure, and he's never played this season. So you add all that stuff up. And they only have 6 scholarship players. Nobody is taller than 6'6". I thought this was funny. Kentucky's starting backcourt is the same size as Dayton's starting frontcourt, okay? So I'm talking to Arch about this, and I'm like, how do you even address this? Like, it must be natural on some level to just go, hey, you know, let's just chalk this up to one of those seasons. And he said, you know what? What I've tried, he said, if you start trying to make excuses, whether it's publicly or privately, your kids are going to hear that, and then it just seeps into everything. He said, so what I've done is turned everything into a positive for us. So rather than talk about us being shorthanded, I explained to my players, we're now in a situation where, hey, we only need 5 to play, and all you guys came here to play, so you get to play through mistakes, you're going to play more minutes, you're going to get better more quickly, so this is actually going to help us. And rather than talk about being short in the front court, I now talk about how much skill we have all over the floor. Like, yeah, we don't have a 6'10 dude on the court anymore, but guess what? We have guys who can handle the basketball at basically every position because we're all little dudes. And so I really stress the idea that this can be advantageous to us. And that has been his message to his players over and over again. And he didn't say this. I'll say it. He doesn't believe any of that. He'd much rather have 2 6'10" dudes and 9 scholarship players. But I thought it was really sort of maybe a larger coaching lesson for other people that when you are, you know, find yourself in the middle of this situation, like, look for something to, like, try to sell it to the guys involved and see if you can capture something in a bottle. And I'm with you. I don't know, Matt, where this is going to end up. Like, it could all fall apart any day. And even Archie said it could all fall apart any day. But so far, it's been, I think, one of the more impressive coaching jobs in America. Sam, is that fair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anytime that you're playing in a top 6-7 league in America and you're performing like this, it's absolutely amazing. And the thing about the way that Dayton's schedule lines up, they only face the top 4 teams in the A-10 once. They only get George Washington, Davidson, VCU, and Rhode Island, who are, you know, like the top 5 clearly in the A-10 this year, I think. They only get them once all year, and that's going to be a really interesting case, I think, whenever it comes down to NCAA tournament selection time, because Dayton probably isn't going to have a lot of great marquee wins, but they're going to rack up what will probably be like a 25-5 record, and it's probably going to be impossible to keep them out at that point, right?
I think if they go 25-5, trust me, they'll be in. I don't know that they're going to
even if they
that,
have zero top 50 wins.
They'll be in at that point. It'll be impossible to keep them out. A-10 overall. I mean, Dayton gets at Davidson next week before we talk again. Winner of that game will be seen as the second best team in the A-10. And just, you know, a quick note on Davidson. That's a team that was picked, I think, 10th preseason. Bob McKillop, you talk about a guy that coaches praise. I mean, that guy's reputation is about as good as any when it just comes to basketball smarts. So in one way, it's not totally surprising, but in another way, people thought Davidson would need a year or two before it was, you know, kicking some ass in conference play like it has in most years under McKillop. But they've adjusted nicely, and the A-10 is, I would think, on pace for a four-bid season, which we weren't sure was going to be the case when we talked in late November.
Now, Davidson got a nice midweek road win at UMass, and they are awesome offensively. Like, when I did that Tony Bennett column a couple weeks ago, I talked to Tony the day before they were getting ready to play Davidson, and his wife and kids were out of town. Like, his wife's from Baton Rouge, Tony Bennett. So they were, like, there for the holidays, like, spending time with her family. So he was like, I'm just, like, you know, I'm a bachelor, like, and I'm just, like, watching Davidson over and over again. He's like, geez, they're really good offensively. And, you know, they had Virginia not on the ropes. That's an exaggeration. But I think they were ahead at halftime.
They were up comfortably for a few minutes in the first half of that game.
Right. No, I think they were ahead at halftime. And so, but either way, like, that's an elite level basketball team on the offensive end of the court, and probably the best Davidson team we've seen since Steph was there. Is that fair?
I think that's about fair. Yeah,
probably,
nothing's gonna be on the level of Steph and the white lobster. Remember the kid?
His name?
He was the white lobster, right? The kid with the red hair.
I don't remember that.
I'm almost positive someone listening is going to let us know and confirm this, but they had I can't remember his name. Quick, random funny side note. There was a guy in that team. Andrew? Lovedale. Yeah, thank you. I'm blanking on his name. He went on and married my next door neighbor, and I did not realize this until I saw her wedding photos on Facebook, and she changed her last name, and I hadn't talked to the girl in like 10 years. But she married, and she's from Vermont. Strangest thing ever. But she went to Davidson. Anyway,
how sweet. Anyway, Bob McKillop. To your point, Bob McKillop is doing a nice job.
It's just the most random Davidson thing ever. The girl who grew up next door to me married, you know, Andrew Lovedale. It was just crazy. Anyway, go ahead.
The girl who grew up next door to me married the guy who lived across the street.
Well, there you go.
Remember, today's Ion College Basketball Podcast brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace is now redesigned with Squarespace 7 interface, including integration with Google Apps, partnership with Getty Images, 15 new templates and cover pages, and Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Everything starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year, and every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content's going to look great on every device every time. Start a free trial. There's no credit card required, and get to building your website today. And when you decide to sign up with Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code FUN to get 10% off and to show your support for the Ion College Basketball Podcast. That's Squarespace. Start here. Go anywhere. Do I sound as sick as I feel like I sound?
You sound very sexy.
Sexy? Is that the word you used?
That is the word I used. You sound like Tony Bennett looks.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow. Jeez. Yeah, I'm a little bit under the weather. I worry about how I wonder, I'm sniffling as if I have the same type of coke problem that Sam has.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that's, I stopped hanging out with John Jones over the weekend. So
thank
I think
God. We'll be okay. How about John Jones going to rehab for a day?
I would say that's got to be a record, but I know it's not.
It can't possibly be a record as long as Lindsay Lohan has lived in this world. But right. can you solve your coke problem in a day? Sam, I'm asking.
I think Socrates once asked that question.
You know what? How about this though? Not to get too off track here, but is it possible? Because I think everybody assumes you're an elite level athlete. You test positive for coke, must have a coke problem. So now you got to go to rehab. And I have no idea whether John Jones has a coke problem or not. I've never hung out with him. And also just
so people are aware, John Jones is an MMA fighter.
Right.
Some people might not be.
No, yeah, he's the best there is. He's like the biggest dude in that sport. It would be like if LeBron James had a coke problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All relatively speaking. And so how about this? Because I got in an argument with a guy the other day. What if he doesn't have a coke problem? What if he was just out partying and somebody was like, yo, man, you want to blow a line? And he blew a line and that was it. And then he was like, oh, God, I got a random drug test. And then he failed it. And so it looked like he has a failed drug test. He actually did blow a line of coke. But he doesn't have a coke problem. He just was like out partying one night and whatever. Like, isn't that reasonable, Sam? Isn't that closer to your story than not?
I think it sounds reasonable.
I think that's very reasonable. And so when people were like, oh my God, isn't it sad he left rehab after a day? What if he never needed to be in rehab to begin with? What if he didn't really have a problem? What if he was just partying one night?
yeah, no, I think that that's a reasonable story without knowing anything at all into this problem in any way.
I'm not above trying to rationalize coke use, if that's what you're asking. Norlander, you did a piece on the most successful college football and basketball schools for the past 20 years. We're going to include it in news and notes presented by Squarespace. Florida was at the top. Did that surprise you at all?
Not totally. I'd been interested in the information there for a while and wondered if anyone had done any kind of deep dive on this. I thought it would be Florida and then Ohio State and then Texas. That wasn't actually the case. I mean, the piece is up. People can give it a read if they'd like, but I went to four different categories essentially for hoops and football, and Florida was the only one that in both football and basketball was top 15 in win percentage, elite in Final Four and bowl game trips, in national championship appearances in football, NCAA tournament trips. It is actually now I'm intrigued and kind of want to write the story on how this is even possible, because no one was even close. Wisconsin was the only one, and they were in like four combined categories. Florida swept it across all eight. It can't just be budget. Your piece kind of debunked that theory in general with the SEC, but it is Florida in a runaway. Maybe some of that's geography. Obviously, some of it is coaching with Donovan, but it's not coaching just on the football side, because they've had good coaches and they've had misfires. So the Gators' ability to be so good across a 20-year span is pretty remarkable when you consider that no one else is really even that close. If you reduced it from 20 years to about 10 or 12 years, Ohio State gets closer. But as you get to a smaller sample size, then there are going to be obviously more teams that factor in. So I wanted to kind of span 20 years, or what you can consider five different recruiting class, you know, eras, so to speak.
Forget the past 20 years for a second. Sam, if I asked you what school has the best combination of football coach and men's basketball coach right now, how would you answer?
Oh, wow.
We'll throw out some obvious ones. Ohio State, Thad Matta. So Ohio State's got Thad Matta and Urban Meyer. Michigan's got Beilein and Harbaugh.
Arizona would be up there. I think Sean Miller and Rich Rod.
I don't know. I don't think that's bad. I don't think that. How about you? Here's one that would be up there that I bet people wouldn't get to. Auburn.
Yeah.
Gus Malzahn and Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's pretty good. What other ones? Norlander, you got any?
I'm trying. I mean, I really like the Michigan one, but because Harbaugh's proven it, I mean, at San Diego and at Stanford. Who else?
Mike Krzyzewski and David Cutcliffe.
Cutcliffe is pretty respected, although they did have a drop this year.
Petrino and Patino.
I would say it's probably Ohio State, because Urban Meyer is – I mean, some will say Saban, but a lot of people would say Meyer is the best. And Matta, on win percentage alone, and some of that's because he doesn't schedule that toughly non-conference-wise, but Matta is a top 15 coach. So I think Ohio State is the answer. But do you either of you have any thoughts why Florida is so clearly the only school that can claim to be elite in both basketball and football? Because it's something that no one else can do. Budgets be damned, coaching be damned, anything.
Oh, sure, other can do. Yeah. Ohio State can do it.
But they have not proven to be able to do it over a two-decade span at this point.
Well, 2 decades is a long time.
That's the point. Yeah. Who can do it over – that's the point. It's not,
I don't think – I don't
like
I don't
hot
think,
six-year period. Who can
my,
do
– My guess on this is that Florida had two super, super elite coaches in football in Meyer and Spurrier during that time. So they kind of racked up high in football – even though they had those down years with Muschamp and Zook. And then they've had Billy Donovan for 15 of that 20 years.
He's been there the entire time that this, he's been the constant. So,
I just think 20 years is like a long time. Like, can anybody sustain anything over 20 years in this era of college athletics?
Exactly. Yeah,
there was a down Ohio State period at the beginning of that for football, and even a little bit for basketball too, or I meant basketball, then football.
As a quick side note, sorry to interrupt you, Sam. You know what I really wasn't totally tuned into is just how freaking good Florida State has been. they're only one of two schools to have made a bowl game every single year, and they had the most. You know, the ACC, I guess, is down, and Miami hasn't been in its top form. But FSU had more conference regular season conference titles than anyone. I thought Florida State was good, but I guess
you didn't realize Florida State was good at football.
No. I knew they were good, but before I had done it, I would not have said over the past 20 years Florida State was a top three program, and that is clearly the case. You would probably go Ohio State 1, Bama 2, Florida State 3. That's probably Florida 4. It's probably what the order I'd put it in.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Anyway,
Of another coaching combination that we probably should mention: Lon Kruger and
Bob Stoops. I was just looking at that one too. I was going through the top 25. Bob Stoops, Lon Kruger is absolutely a good one. I'm trying to go through the rest of them.
Did you touch Izzo and D'Antonio?
They belong on the list. How about this?
That's probably top five.
Art Briles, Scott Drew. Say what you want. Here's Baylor again, ranked in the top 25, coming off a win over Iowa State.
It's not the Drew factor. I mean, Briles is pretty good. Briles is
awesome. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's remarkable because he came to the game so late because he was a high school coach for so long, and now he's balling out. So
no, but that's it. If you could take any combination though, going forward for the next 10 years, you could have any combination. It'd probably be Meyer and Mata, right? Thad Mata, Urban Meyer.
Yes, that would be the combo for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
That would be my choice.
I think that's right.
I agree with that, too.
Okay, so Wyoming got ranked this week, and that was big for Larry Shy, big for that program. And then they went out and lost a home game to San Diego State. Wyoming, just a nice little story. They got ranked or a legitimate top 25 team, Norlander?
Ooh, nice little story. They're going to make the tournament. That conference is going to send three. It's going to be a fun little race. I've been high on San Diego State kind of consistently all year. I think that is the best team in that league. But Nance's kid is a freaking blast to watch, man. Just a fearless, terrific dunker, hops for days and nights. And no reason to think why Cowboys won't get there. By there, I mean NCAA tournament. It would be Shiat's first trip there. That court, by the way, is gorgeous. I was watching that game, San Diego State, Wyoming, on Wednesday night. It's one of my favorite courts, and Gottlieb then asked me to rank my top five, and I said I couldn't do it. So, do you guys have a favorite court by chance?
I don't pay attention to the.
Neither do I.
Too often. Yeah, no, I'm trying to fluster Gary by going off topic a little bit.
You can't fluster me because I'll just say I don't care about that.
that is your get out of jail card, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. My trump card is always I've never thought about that because I couldn't care less about that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, point is, San Diego State is going to, I'll do a quick forecast here. I think San Diego State will win the league, get around a 4 seed. Wyoming is going to be right there with them with Colorado State. I think those are the three that'll get there. And I think they will all likely be in that single digit range because they've racked up good records to this point, and I think they're going to beat up on the bottom of the league. So good on them. And at least the Mountain West is going to be able to capitalize on having a few more solid teams, and the bubble is always what it is. But I think that those three, there won't be any question. I think they'll be flatly and clearly in.
Sam, let's wrap up with this big injury news from earlier in this week. Trayvon Jackson is out at Wisconsin, fractured foot, going to miss a significant amount of time. How significant is this to Wisconsin?
I think it's pretty significant into the immediate future in that he is the guy that they count on the perimeter to really create something at the end of a shot clock or to really like get their offense going if they need some sort of little burst. But also, I think it might be decent for them to get Bronson Koenig involved, to get a couple of the other bench guards involved, just because I guess the one question that I had about them going into the year was depth. Like, outside of their top seven, could anyone else step up and really become a role player on that team off the bench you could maybe get like a 10-point outburst from? I haven't really seen anyone step up like that yet from them. So I think that in the long run, this might help them there. But I also think that this probably knocks Wisconsin down to a clear 2 seed, maybe even a 3 seed come NCAA tournament time, just because Jackson's really important to what they do on offense.
Hey, GP.
Yep.
Can I hop in here and just
get
your quick thoughts here on Saturdays, because there's a couple big games.
Yeah.
One, Kansas at Iowa State. I mean, that's pretty big.
I think Iowa State wins at home.
I do too.
And
I
you know, too. And you know how much I think too. Of Kansas. I have them ranked fifth in the top 25 of one right now. I love Kansas, but I don't know. I think I've reached a point with Hilton that I just will never pick anybody to win there except for Iowa State.
Well, Kansas does have a couple of controversial wins there in recent years. Yes. And if Kansas does win that game, I mean, Bill Self's going to win the freaking Big 12 again. They're going to be 4-0, and they'll have had their toughest road game out of the way, in my opinion. Just a side note, not really a question. Connecticut plays at Stanford. They're probably going to lose that game, and their at-large hopes will expire. They would need to basically nearly run the table to have any chance.
Expire? So, you're already expiring somebody's at-large
hopes? Dude, they'd be 9-7 at that point. I mean, the American isn't going to have enough. Do you disagree? I mean, if Connecticut loses at Stanford, which they probably are, do you think they'll have a chance to be an at-large team, and we'll be talking about them at the end of February?
I think it is possible to lose at Stanford and still be an at-large team, if only because, my God, I rank the top 25 and one every morning, and I get to 17, and I want to slit my wrist. There are about 17 teams that feel like they ought to be ranked, and then it's go try it. I think this is true. There are about 17, 18 teams that everybody should have ranked in the top 25. And then after that, like, whatever. Like, it is just a mess. So
okay, so here would be my question for you, or argument. So within that grouping, you still consider Connecticut among those teams?
No. But I'm just saying, like, it is mid-January, and we got to put 68 teams in this stupid tournament.
Yeah, I just don't think they're going to overcome it.
Them in a must-win situation then.
I do. I feel like if they win it, it'd actually be really huge, and that'll help them out because they don't have the resume. Like, they don't have the wins this point at all. And
only one loss outside of the top 100 at KenPom. Only one loss outside of the top 70 at KenPom.
How many top 50 wins do they have right now?
Three is not an insignificant number.
Who do they come?
One of them's Florida, though. Keep in mind, Florida's pretty highly. Florida, I think, is pretty overrated in KenPom right now. Still,
sure.
Yeah. All right. Two more quickies here. One, Utah at Arizona. I actually kind of am feeling Utah on that one.
You think Utah wins at Arizona? I don't. I think there's a handful of teams that I'll never pick to lose at home. It doesn't mean that they won't lose at home or can't lose at home, but like, I'm not gonna pick anybody at Rupp. I'm not gonna pick anybody at Arizona. Not gonna pick anybody at Gonzaga. Not gonna pick anybody at Hilton. Not gonna pick anyone at Allen Fieldhouse. So, neutral court. Let's go play at Utah. I'll pick Utah at Arizona. I'll go Arizona over Utah.
Okay, Sam. Any thoughts on that one?
I think it's going to be a really tight defensive game that comes down to the last possession, so I'm copping out.
I do think that will be the best game between ranked teams this weekend.
I agree.
And I'm going to Louisville Duke. So what do you get?
I think that Arizona Utah is going to be better.
Well,
I think Duke is going to win that game by 8 points.
What? On the road? Duke by 8? Norlander, are you the one with the Coke problem?
I'm like totally on the other side of that too. I think Louisville's going to win by like 8.
I will say this though: Duke's issues are undeniable at this point. It won't surprise me at all if they go in there and win. I mean,
I don't know.
They've already won at the Kohl Center. Let's not pretend that they can go somewhere else and win, right?
Like, yeah, I just think they're going to freaking come out and play out of their minds. And it's going to be tough, but I feel like it'll be good. And then final 3-4 minutes, it'll kind of, you know. They won't run away with it, but I don't think Louisville will. You'll ever get the sense Louisville has the chance to win it in the final 2 minutes or so.
I am looking forward to being there more than anything, though. I am looking forward to going to sleep. I have been up. It's it's about 8:15 Eastern on Thursday night right now, PM. I've been up since 4 a.m. and that's after sleeping 2 hours. Because I was in a television studio till like roughly 1:30, and then by the time I fell asleep, I was in a television studio at 12:30, fell asleep around 1:45 or 2. So I slept 2 hours, and then did multiple flights, and so I'm now under the weather. My immune system cannot handle this, so I'm gonna go to bed. You guys can keep arguing about this dumb shit if you want to.
No, we won't. GP, real quick, I'm 4 episodes into season 2 of The Americans, and
it's good, right? You love it.
Oh, I freaking love it.
Did you know Kurt Busch used to date Kerry Russell?
No.
It's a true story.
Oh my God. No, I just got it.
Yeah, true story.
Yeah. Quick delayed beat. Nice.
Hey,
nice.
I think she's an assassin. I really do. I think that I think Kurt Busch's ex-girlfriend is an assassin.
You believe that story?
I believe he believes that story.
you believe he believes it. It's not a lie if you believe it.
Somebody has to be an assassin. Do we acknowledge that in this world there are assassins?
Oh yeah, there are assassins in this world, and it is awesome and terrifying to think about because those people.
Hey, listen, I'm being dead serious here. Like, okay, we're not talking about unicorns, okay? I'm talking about do you just answer these questions for me? Do you think assassins exist?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, then why can't she be one? Plus, have you looked at her background? She actually worked for a company that did like covert operations for the United States government. At the very least, she's assassin. Is she?
Yeah, and it's the source here. That's all. Listen, I want it desperately to be true, but
my only concern with the whole story is if you're an assassin and you're getting roughed up, would you call in the authorities and blow your assassin cover, or would you just like be an assassin and handle it yourself?
No, that's the thing. I think that's the deal. Is like if you take on that role, there is no calling. No, you accept the terms that you might die alone and no one knows what you were all about.
And that's the only red flag in the whole thing is that.
Question also is, if she's an assassin, why would she tell her boyfriend? Like, typically you don't tell anyone that you're an assassin. So
correct.
Did Kurt Busch just like catch her in the act?
Are we thinking that Kurt Busch is savvy enough to uncover the fact that his girlfriend is an assassin?
And then enough to stay with her afterwards.
She came home. Well, okay, let's take this step by step. First off, she came home one night, like covered in blood and like brain matter. Okay.
And which she denies and says she's writing a screenplay about.
Okay, well, either way, Kurt Busch believes this, right? And so your girl comes home covered in blood and brain matter, and you're like, yo, so what happened?
She's like, yo, I was just with John Jones, and he's getting over a coke problem.
She says, I'm an assassin. I have to level with you. And then, okay, so then once she levels with you that she's an assassin, because people tell people secrets all the time. I don't know why, but they just do. So you level with the person you love that you're an assassin, and then you got to make this choice. Okay, is it crazy to date an assassin? On one hand, yes, but what's crazier? Breaking up with an assassin. You gonna break up with an assassin? I had a hard time in my life like breaking up with people anyway, because I was like, I don't wanna hurt her feelings, or I don't wanna, like, she seems like a nice enough girl.
But I tell you what, here's the deal, is if you're dating an assassin, the best move to possibly make is publicly out the assassin so that if you go down, people will then immediately suspect that you were killed by the assassin.
That's a really good point.
I think she's an assassin. Here's the other thing. She's also cute. Have you seen her pictures?
I have not.
Okay, she's probably slightly below average for a NASCAR wife or girlfriend, but like above average just for like your normal walking around. And so it sort of leads to this idea, like, who are the most famous assassins in our country? Angelina Jolie.
Yes, famous, legitimate assassin.
And Carrie Russell, right?
Yes.
And I think it benefits to be hot if you're an assassin, because you can trick people into, like, you could trick men into not, into like just like coming back to your hotel so you can assassinate them. Carrie Russell does.
Garner an alias too.
Yeah, see what I'm talking about? Carrie Russell does it all the time. She like goes and she meets like some guy who's like working on a nuclear head, and she like bumps into him at the bar, and like within minutes she's like, so would you like to go back to my hotel room? And there's no scenario under which this dude in the bar would ever have this girl, this beautiful woman, looks like Carrie Russell, coming on to him, but he doesn't care about that. He's just happy that she's taking her shirt off, and so she takes her shirt off and he's just really, really happy, and then she assassinates him because she's an assassin. And so I think that this Kurt Busch's girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, she checks all these boxes. She has a background, a professional background where she worked for a company that might be involved in this type of work. She's pretty, and she's been covered in blood and brain matter. What more do you need to know?
I guess I don't, man.
I think you just sold me.
I'm telling you the truth. Everybody, you read the headline, because it came out earlier this week. You read the headline, and it's like, Kurt Busch testifies his ex-girlfriend's an assassin, and you all laugh. And I looked at this, and I'm like, that bitch is an assassin. That's what I thought. I started really diving in. She's an assassin. Or at the very least, she has convinced him at some point she's an assassin. I have to go to bed. I have to go to bed. I'm going to think about this some more. I'll get back to you later on.
I think we could perish delirium.
It was great to be back with you guys.
Go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. It's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest podcast. Make sure to do that. And I'm going to go to Louisville, and then I'm going to come back home, and I will talk to you again on Monday. Take care.